From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the Doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hello and welcome to The Doctor Is In. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
And I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Joel, I want to talk about dirty transceivers.
Oh my.
I want to get dirty. You know, with like nicotine all over them that you find at the flea market, you know, that kind of thing. But that's not really why we're here, is it, Joel?
I guess not. Yeah.
Not really. We're talking about spectrally dirty.
Hygiene is for other venues, I think.
Well, how about electromagnetic hygiene?
There you go.
Okay.
That's in our department. The ideal transceiver puts out a signal with a bandwidth appropriate for the mode and the information being transmitted. That's sort of the general rule. And there's no specific bandwidth noted in most applications of that. But the idea is don't have signals where they aren't needed. Don't have extra signals. Don't have spurious signals. Don't have extra wide signals, so forth. Now, it's confusing to a lot of people because we may think we are transmitting on the single frequency shown on the display of our transmit frequency on our radios. That's generally referred to as the carrier frequency. But what's interesting is that frequency may not be transmitted at all. In fact, if you're sending single sideband, your radio spends a lot of effort not transmitting that frequency, but transmitting a band of frequencies either slightly above it or slightly below it, depending on which sideband you're using. So it's important to remember that we're actually sending a band of frequencies. And the idea is that band should correspond to the information content that we're transmitting. As an example, just to make the numbers easy, early single sideband transmitters typically had a bandwidth of 3 kilohertz, which was corresponding to the normal telephone company voice standard for what was called a toll quality signal that you could charge a customer for. They've gotten narrower now, but the numbers work well with that. So typically the bandwidth was from 300 hertz or 0.3 kilohertz to 3300 hertz or 3.3 kilohertz, 3 kilohertz bandwidth. And if we set our radio at 14.2 megahertz on the 20 meter band, so the VFO says that the signal that we're sending out on the upper sideband would actually be 14,200.3 kilohertz to 14,203.3 kilohertz. So it's a well-defined band that equals that of the filter.
I could hear the mathematical wheels spinning in your mind there.
I hate to do numbers on this, but I don't know how to do it without numbers. It'd be so much easier if I had a blackboard, but, you know, you can work with what you got. So anyway, hopefully most people have the picture there. Now, with CW, it's a little simpler because you actually are transmitting, hopefully, on the frequency that's shown on the dial. And it's a much narrower spectrum. It's not a single frequency because the on-off pulsing results in a spread of the spectrum somewhat depending on how fast you're keying it and the actual pulse shape that's transmitted. So an actual rectangular pulse that we often think of would have a very wide bandwidth, but the usual rounded pulse will have a narrower bandwidth, and typically with hand-keyed transmission it'll be a bandwidth no wider than the tens of hertz. So that's the ideal case. That's what we want to send, and that would be a clean transmission in either of those modes. What actually happens is we generally amplify the signal that we generate in the transceiver, either within the transceiver or in an outside amplifier. And all amplifiers have some distortion. Now, the first one kind of distortion we think of is harmonic distortion, which we used to struggle with our early transmitters that operated in Class C, nonlinear kind of things. And there, the 20-meter signal would also show up on 10 meters and on 5 meters and so forth, which caused a lot of problems in the early TV days. Those problems have pretty much been solved by having more linear amplifiers and better filtering. But what happens is we now have to worry about the signals, the distortion that results in signals inside the band that we're transmitting on. So this is typically intermodulation distortion, which is combinations of harmonics generated in the radio itself before the filtering and resulting in signals that end up near or right on our channel. And oftentimes they widen the channel. There are other kinds of distortion that also happen. The results of those are signals that are wider than they should be, splattering over multiple channels, And because they're the result of typically voice communication in a sideband transmitter, they aren't steady. They're kind of buckshotty kind of thing. In the lab, when we do product reviews, we actually put in two sinusoidal signals, two steady carriers in a sideband transmitter, like two tones, two people whistling at the same time. And if the transmitter were operating perfectly, we'd just get two tones on the output. But
yes,
we don't. What we get is all kinds of intermodulation products between those two. Some of them showing up in our channel, some of them showing up outside the channel. And we report on those as third-order IMD, fifth-order, and so forth. Now, what happens is those kinds of products get higher and higher level as we tend to drive the amplifiers with more and more input. The problem is a lot of people don't understand that when they look at their single sideband transmitter that's rated at 100 watts, when they're talking, the output power meter generally shows about 15 to 20 watts. And they say, gee, I'm not getting all my power. Let me crank it up. Well, the problem is the meter doesn't respond to your voice peaks. So that 10 to 15 or 20 percent of the total power is typically what you'd expect to see depending on the compression level and so forth that you set. So when people crank it up, what they do is they generate more and more of these intermodulation products that get wider and wider. And it's sort of hard to, when you hear them on the air, it's hard to tell what transmitter they're coming from. But if you look at them on a spectrum analyzer, it jumps right out at you. So somebody down the street who's looking at your wide signal will immediately know it's you, even though your voice is not recognizable in these strange sounds that come out a little bit away from your channel. So it's very important that you adjust the transmitter the way the manufacturer tells you, and don't overdrive your linear amplifier for the same reason all this kind of stuff happens. So if you look at the product reviews and they tell you what the intermodulation distortion is in amplifiers and transmitters, that's kind of the best case when it's set up properly. If you go cranking things wide open, you are going to generate many more products, many of them outside the band that you're transmitting in, not just the pass band, but they can go right outside the ham band, and you can get in real trouble if you get into somebody else's territory.
Oh, yeah.
But not only that, but you're being sort of an impolite neighbor, and you're being illegal if you send out wider bandwidth than you need to convey the information. So that's my view of what a dirty transmitter is all about.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's take a break for a moment. We'll be right back. We'll hear from DX Engineering.
All right.
Remember your first contact? The excitement of that first CQ? The exhilaration of making your first QSO? At DX Engineering, we know that feeling too. That's why we've committed to making your on-air experience the very best it can be. DX Engineering ships quickly, which means less station downtime. And we have free shipping for almost any order over $99. We've recently expanded our inventory, so you don't have to wait for the gear you need. DX Engineering has introduced all new radio products and revived legendary brands, all with the goal of helping you enjoy amateur radio. Most importantly, the DX Engineering team is here to help you. You've got a team of highly experienced hams ready to work out technical issues, answer questions, and help you optimize your station performance. That excitement you felt from the first contact, it can happen again and again with help from DX Engineering. DXEngineering.com. That's DXEngineering.com.
And we're back. And as long as we've been talking about dirty transmitters and distortion generally, I've got a question for you, Joel. This one comes from John, K9YAW. And he's asking, I've heard some recent discussions about adaptive pre-distortion technology. Can you explain what it is and how it works?
Well, that's a good question, John, and it relates very nicely to our earlier topic about dirty transmitters, as Steve said. I don't think this has shown up in the ham business yet, but that doesn't mean it won't be, or it couldn't be. It may even be. I haven't been able to find any examples of it, but let's talk about it anyway because it is an interesting technology. Now, just to set the stage, many of us are familiar with kind of non-dynamic fixed pre-distortion. That was used in the audio industry back in the vinyl record days. Those of you who remember those. What happens is it's determined that most of the noise and limitations of performance of recorded music were the result of the surface noise on the records that just happened. The surface noise was kind of constant over the bandwidth, but what was noticed was that the music tended to be much stronger in the lower registers in the bass region than it was in the treble region. So the treble had kind of fine grain information that could get lost in the noise easily. Their solution to that was to pre-distort the signal going to the recording by emphasizing the high frequencies, bringing the high frequencies up by a fixed amount. And then that made the signal-to-noise ratio higher because the noise was still at the same low level. Then when they got to the receiving side, into the preamplifier, as you were listening to it, the opposite distortion was put in. It was the high frequencies were reduced. So the high frequencies were taken back down to their original level. But notice what happened. The noise is also taken down. So the higher signal-to-noise ratio you had for the high frequencies is maintained, and now the signal-to-noise ratio is improved in that region. So that's a kind of pre-distortion.
That's actually very clever when you think about it.
I think this happened, I'm not sure exactly when. I became aware of it in the 50s maybe, mm-hmm. but I think it probably goes back long before that. Whenever it's called an RIAA compensation or something curve, and it's a recording industry something association, I don't know. But anyway.
Something like that.
Some organization back then.
Some organization.
And it was fixed to all record players and all hi-fi equipment and all everything, recording studios, all did that. It's kind of a standard.
Some sneaky organization. Probably the Illuminati, maybe?
Must have been. Something like that. Anyway, so this is kind of an adaptation of the same kind of concept. But it's slightly different in that instead of having a fixed pre-distortion, what we do is we recognize that when we put a RF signal into an amplifier and drive it, especially if we drive it a little on the hard side, it will distort. And if we're very clever and when we take an electrical snapshot of the signal going in, if the amplifier were perfect, we'd get a copy of that coming out, but it would just be louder, larger, more higher amplitude. So if we compare the two waveforms, and we notice the distortion, if we do it fast enough and cleverly enough, what we can do is apply sort of an opposite sense distortion on the input side, and that will result in kind of a cancellation of the distortion in the amplifier. So that's the idea. And the reason it makes sense is, as we talked about earlier, that people tend to crank up their amplifiers to get more power output. Well, that makes more distortion. But if you're selling amplifiers and you have an amplifier that actually can put out for a broadcast station 100,000 watts, but if it's above 50,000 watts, it starts to get distorted, you've got two choices. You either make a much bigger amplifier than you might need, which costs a lot more, or you put in some kind of processing that reduces the distortion. Some of our ham amplifiers are getting pretty darn expensive, so it may be, and also processing is getting easier and cheaper.
Yes.
So if it isn't in some ham amplifiers now, I wouldn't be surprised to see it show up in the not too far distant future. But it's a very clever technology, and it requires, you know, good processing and so forth. But with high-speed computation, it's probably quite possible to make an amplifier have less distortion, all things being equal.
So is this done digitally? Are they sampling the signal? And
I would expect that it would be. It certainly could be done either way. But I think the most processing around now is done digitally. Of course, you're starting with an analog signal and you're ending with an analog signal. So you have to at some point do the conversion and run your algorithms and then put it back into analog and make the change happen in an analog way. But I would suspect that the processing would be done digitally. The actual computation would be done that way.
That's amazing technology.
It's an interesting idea. And I'm glad he raised the question because I hadn't been aware of it in this context before.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Joel.
My pleasure.
ARRL, The Doctor Is In, is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.